Welcome to Curious Coaching, the Sport Northern Ireland podcast for coaches who are driven to explore new ways, thirsty for new ideas, and passionately curious about how they can maximise the power of sport through great coaching. The podcast that seeks not to answer coaching questions, but to provoke them.
Hello and welcome to the Curious Coaching podcast. Your hosts today are myself, Michael Cook, and Simon Toole. As always, we're going to bring you a focus on coaching in Northern Ireland. And our guest today, we're delighted to have with us, is Ricky Huey from Ulster Rugby. Ricky, you're very, very welcome to the podcast.
Delighted to be with you, yourself, Michael. You and I have been involved in quite a lot of work in recent years. It's good to catch up with you again, and likewise with Simon. I'm sort of looking forward to spending a wee bit of time with fellow colleagues and just discussing coaching issues, I hope.
Brilliant, fantastic. And you're right, you and I, we go back a few years now, and I think you're someone that I had always spoke to, and you always jumped out to me as someone who had just a wealth of experience in coaching. You've coached on different continents, and you know, you've I would say with you as a real vocation. And I begin for you to share with the listeners a little bit about your story, your history, and how you got into coaching, where it all started, and where it's taken you now up into your current role.
Yeah. Well, look, lovely question to get us going, Michael. The only problem is my journey has been a long one, as you quite rightly said. And we could eat up a lot of time. So, but I'm with you, and hopefully I'm just typical of someone who starts off with a love of sport as a young person, that carries on through playing through your school years. It took me a career pathway. There's nothing else I wanted ever to be than a PE teacher when I was school, despite my family's frustrations. I did that, went to Stradmillis a long time ago now. And my pathway is just a natural progression that has taken me through a love of sport and knowing what sport did for me and what sport can do, genuinely do for individuals, communities, everything else. I don't need to tell you guys that. So really my pathway, and look, I'll be frank, my pathway is over 45 years in this. I'm in my 60s now, early 60s, and I'm not going to drag it out too long, but that it was a natural, organic progression for me, PE teacher. 4 or 5 years in that, got itchy feet, started to dabble into outdoor education, but then Causeway Institute attracted me with their new vision of getting into sports and health sciences long before many others did. If I'm frank, during that period, I'm very proud of what we achieved then. I mean, we may have started from humble beginnings, but there was a time for a number of years when we were at the cutting edge of sports science in terms of on-field support, practical application, fitness testing, all sorts of stuff I'd love to talk about. I remember some great memories of those times where meeting students. Then would be students you're interviewing now, Owen Kearney, you know what I mean, Kenny Shields, Neil Doak, Michael Black, you know what I mean. They were in the field. They were practitioners, and they were coming in to get a wee bit of more academic background and support, as opposed to students just coming through the natural age pathway of college, university, etc. So it was really exciting times, and I remember working with Irish League football teams way ahead of anyone else on fitness testing. I remember loving my time working with Peter Kavanagh and the Cavan All-Ireland team that won the All-Ireland, just helping them with their fitness testing, evaluating their program, looking at nutritional input. I did the same at Silly Derry with rugby when we had a very successful year and became the best team in Ulster for a period of time. So PE teacher into health, sports sciences, that was a big jump for me. That opened up my mind and I started to delve into my own personal knowledge. But more importantly, you know, there's academics and there's practitioners, and I hope I'm a practitioner at the end of the day. I'm still a coach at heart. I still want to be out in the field. I still want to be with players. So that was a big progression for me. And then from that, there was the obvious involvement then as a coach with just working with youth teams, even up in the Northwest, getting involved in student rugby then became big because we attracted so much talent. We were able to suddenly have representative teams of our college, a small college that was going away on Wednesdays regularly and beating universities in Limerick and Dublin. It blew me away what we could do, and it opened up those pathways for me. And whilst, you know, I played all sports, I'm a cricket fanatic, I played a lot of soccer with Roy Miller, coaching rugby has always fascinated me a little bit more than other sports because on the eye, it catches your eye, the impact, there's a lot going on. It can appear to be a very, very technical and complicated sport. And what I realized, I wish I'd known then what I know now, but what I did realize was the more you can simplify, more you can simplify your message to get a collective thinking out there on the pitch. And I thought I was quite good at that. I think that's what good teaching and good coaching is taking something that could be complicated, but actually getting a collective simple mentality that understands out there, you know. So look, back to the journey, that's it. Into coaching, club coaching, youth coaching, student coaching got big. I was lucky enough to coach them provincial student teams and inter-pros where we did really well. And then I got a golden opportunity, which was to be part of the coaching team that took a fantastically talented Irish student team to South Africa in 1999-2000. I mean, Paul O'Connell, who's just coming in to coach Ireland forwards now, he was 19 at the time, so they are. And I look back, Michael Black was on that, a colleague of mine, and Chris Shields. But nearly every player on that tour either went on to play for Ireland or played provincial rugby in some position. So, you know, it was one of those month-long tours that cost a fortune that the Irish rugby football union wasn't going to do very often. So they weren't going to waste the opportunity. They were going to make damn sure that the players went and that got back into the game and helped the game. And that's exactly 20, 21 years ago. We celebrated the 20th anniversary of that last year. In fact, we were trying to get out this year to the Lions in South Africa with some of them, but COVID, which no doubt we'll talk about again, got in the way of that. And then, sorry to be so long to everybody, but as I said before I started, 45 years, a long time to squeeze into a few minutes. So that opened doors for me. And it also made me realise what I was capable of, and it also made me realise what was going on in other countries. And South Africa is a country, if you're a sports person, has a particular attraction, and indeed, especially in rugby. And I came back from that tour a different person. I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about the game. I learned about the country. And I also had feelings of how lucky I was to get what a great rugby learning experience. But I also took back views of the country that I wasn't happy with. You know, some of the things I saw. Rugby, it was great for me. Other things weren't healthy. You know, you probably know what I'm talking about. I didn't like the way some of the population were being treated. And I actually came back and did something about that. I had built up a relationship with the Sharks in Durban, fantastic super rugby franchise, way ahead of anything we had. They were the only team to beat us in that tour. Their under 21s beat our national team. I came back and we started working on them on giving opportunities for young black and non-white players an opportunity to leave South Africa, come over, get educated for a year at the college, get involved in sports science and you know, that's still going on in some part to this day, albeit it has moved away from where we were in the Northwest. So yeah, and then, that gave me my link with South Africa. Then I was back doing what I've been doing for years, coaching and involved in sports science. And then one night I came back from training, soaking wet, freezing cold, the usual stuff, notes wet in the pocket. You all know it, guys. And my wife says to me, she says, "How do you fancy going to South Africa here?" I says, "What are you talking about?" She says, "The Sharks are just off the phone. They're headhunting, they're wanting you to set up a new academy system in South Africa. You fit the bill, they know you. Your objective in terms of politics going out there." And I thought, what the hell, you know? And I was just approaching 50, guys, you know?
How many seconds did you take to do that up?
In my head, one. And then when it sank in, the practicalities of doing it, look, my employers were great. We decided to go for a year. I was out there 6 months and I was sending requests saying, no, I'm staying here. But my wife is fantastic. My kids had sort of grown up at that stage. It was a good time to go. I mean, there's only two times you can go, before the kids are born or after the kids have spent all your money, for want of a better word. And so we went, but the one condition was she would come and support me, and she was fantastic, that we would always return home as soon as the grandchildren arrived. So after 7-8 brilliant years in South Africa, bingo, the grandchildren arrived, and I had to honour my side of the commitment and return home. And I've thrown him a lot since I come back with Ulster Rugby in any way I can. Okay, long-winded answer, but there you are. It's all about just letting things happen organically and being lucky enough to be given opportunities along the way. I think that's key. You need a lot of luck along the road.
And thank you for sharing that, Ricky. And you actually did really well to put 40 years into months there. So I'm impressed. You mentioned that, like, that is a fantastically long career to be involved in sport. And I'm wondering, in terms of coaching, how have you seen things evolve over time? Have things changed? Have things stayed the same? How do you see it?
I mean, I could anticipate that question. That's an obvious question. How has it evolved over that period? I think some things stay the same. And the good things stay the same. People are the same. You know, people love sport. People want to learn. People want to make friends. The nice thing about this whole journey, no matter where you go in on the journey, it's the people you're working with, the players, the parents, the schools, the clubs, the coaches, the wonderful people. It's not just rugby. It's soccer. It's Gaelic. It's everything. We cricket. We all know this. It's why we love our work. So I think the things that have stayed the same are the basic ingredients of people, their love of sport. I think the why needs looked at, but it's not too far off. I mean, why did people go into coaching 20, 30 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago? Why do people want to play sport? I don't think it's changed too much. I think people, you ask the typical kid, why are you playing rugby? Why are you playing Gaelic? You know, it'll be for the usual, making friends, getting fit, learning a new sport, blah, blah, blah. So I think those fundamentals, core values, have remained pretty constant. And I may be talking about rugby in particular, but I have a wide interest, as you well know, Michael, in all sports and love of all sports. What has evolved that's different? I think coaching, which we're talking about, it's constantly evolving, constantly evolving. I mean, there isn't a day that something's not going on in your head about what's going on out there and how's it affecting me and what can I learn from this. Sometimes you can be thinking about coaching subconsciously, not even consciously. So I think it's constantly evolving, as you know, as we self-reflect on a regular basis and learn, and we're looking at that evolution. And I think maybe the big impacts on that are probably coming from the story I told you earlier. You know, coaching's bound to change whenever you look at other disciplines and the impact sports science has in coaching. What are we learning about coach development? What are we learning about, you know, exercise physiology, fitness testing? What is new technology providing for us that can add to this coaching evolution journey? Analysis, statistics. There's all sorts of things that are constantly going to keep arriving that are going to bring about change. The fundamentals of why we coach and why kids want to be coached, I don't think they have changed at all.
I think that's a lovely answer, Ricky. And you're right, like, you know, people are people. And sometimes when we get caught up in the world of, you know, as you say, sports science and technology and stuff, they are so important. But the one thing that's probably more important for me, in my perspective, is that we are coaching people. We're coaching a person first and foremost, and an athlete second, or a participant second. It's really refreshing to hear you say that you have seen that's the one bit that hasn't really changed over time.
No, and to support what you're saying, Michael, I mean, I describe my journey, and you know, my journey's coming almost in a full loop. Since I came back from working the professional game, I'm more or less throwing myself back into the domestic game in any way that I can help. It's mainly through coach education and stuff and all, which, and I'm loving every bit of it as much as I did as it was in the coach. Different challenges, as you might expect. But that love of sport is still, you know, is still what's driving me on and the people involved. And agree totally with you, Michael.
Simon has a question for you now. He is curious about what you are curious about.
Yeah, thanks, Ricky. That was brilliant to sit back and listen through that. And towards the end here, you've talked about how things have changed and how things have stayed the same. So I suppose just with the name of our podcast, this tends to be our staple question that we ask everybody who comes through the virtual door about, what would you be curious about at the minute in coaching? You know, what would you be looking to stick your head in and have a look at right now?
Right now, I'm sorry to give you this answer, but then hopefully we'll get it. Guys, we can't escape the fact that COVID has freaking taken over our thinking. And I'm really sorry, because I don't want this to be about COVID. But if we just think, oh, look, we'll wait till COVID's over and we'll get back to it before then we're all fools. And I know we don't think like that. So I'm more than happy to talk about other things that we're inquisitive about, Simon, but I've got to deal with the here and now. And I think the most curious thing, and I'm on Zoom calls as you guys are with colleagues in Ulster, and what's keeping us up at night is the short and long-term impact of COVID. What's the environment going to be like? What's the coaching environment going to be like? What's our coaching capacity going to be like when we come back? You know, any challenges we had before are probably multiplied now. We're going to have to be smart in our thinking. And more importantly, sorry to be philosophical, but I know you guys will agree with this. Just as a governing body, our main focus at the moment is how can we help society? I know the Gaelic boys will be the same, the rugby, the soccer, hockey, will all be the same. How can we all play our part to heal society, get over this crazy pandemic, and get back to whatever it is we want to get back to? Don't know yet what that is. So it's not a great answer for you, but it's an honest answer, Simon, at the minute. That's sort of what we're curious about at the minute, returning to a safe environment and an enjoyable one.
And Ricky, I don't think it's an answer that we need to get away from necessarily at the minute. Obviously, it's a really, really challenging time, as you have acknowledged, outside of sport and some of the things and challenges that society has is really a struggle. But is there anything that you're thinking in the short term, actually us as coaches or us as people working on sport can be doing to ensure that our sports are in the best place that they can be coming out of this? And anything long term you think we're likely to have to change because of what's going on at the minute?
Look, the first part, Simon, I mean, we haven't been twiddling our thumbs during this period, and I want to pay credit to our own team, you know, our coach education team. From when the impact stopped and schools and clubs weren't allowed to really participate in the way they wanted to, we've been using this time as wisely as we can, because you know, life's frantic all the time. And one of the things we always found was we never had the bleeding time. We never had that white space, that free time to clear up your head and do that self-evaluation of where we were going, either individually or collectively. We always seemed to be on that treadmill of being so busy that we actually never got time ourselves to improve our product, to reflect on what was going well. You know what life's like pre-COVID. Bang, 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 bang. Time was the thing you couldn't get. Now we got time. At least COVID gave us time, you know, and we have some exceptional leadership going on in Ulster Rugby. We've got three new people in over the recent last couple of years. We have a new CEO, Johnny Petrie, and we've got a new coach in Dan McFarland. It's fairly evident already their impact. And we've got a new manager of development, Gavin Hall, the lovely guy. And you know, we personally speaking, I think we've got three great guys and they're coming in to start driving us forward. And we weren't going to waste this opportunity. So we've been looking at the technical side of the game, how we can make improvements there. We've been doing a vast amount of work in improving our coach education system in terms of updating content. We also had to look at not just changing and improving content, but trying to make that content an online content. And I'm sure you guys have discovered, as sports people, online content for a practical sport isn't the perfect marriage. But would I tell you, you know, I'm pretty pleased what we've done. I'm confident. I'm not saying it's great, but I'm saying given the conditions we're working under and the number of coaches, you know, that are coming online, not just the traditional coach education courses at stages 1, 2, and even 3 in high performance that we're running. We've also got, I lost my line of thinking there. We've also picked up on our coach development program, similar, you know, what can we do online there? We're improving our mentorship program. We're actually designing a new type of mentorship, just trusted friend type stuff that we can trickle down knowledge and information. So, you know, we have genuinely used this as an opportunity not to feel sorry for ourselves, but to get out there, as you say, Simon, and say, look, if and when we get back this, make sure we're ready to support the needs and expectations of players, coaches, parents, schools, et cetera, and at the same time, play our part in improving the physical and mental health of the whole community.
No, absolutely. There's definitely big challenges for us all. I think you're right. We've certainly seen that ourselves. Even this podcast actually is a result of COVID that we actually got around to doing it. Because as you say, we've been talking about it for 4 or 5 years and all of a sudden all your normal methods of delivery are taken away from you and you have to think about different things. So hopefully there's some good stuff that we can take through while none of us wouldn't have chosen. For society in general to be going through what it's going through at the minute. Ricky, for me, one of the things you also chatted about when you were giving your introduction, you said actually South Africa was a huge learning opportunity for you, both in terms of it as a country, but also a rugby learning opportunity. And I'm not saying it has to be that opportunity, but is there something that you've experienced across those 45 years you would say, that's the best learning opportunity I've ever experienced? That's what the learning I've got the most from.
Yeah, that's a good question, isn't it? I mean, I think there were a couple of occasions during that long journey you talked about that really jump out. And one I've already mentioned, one was moving into other disciplines and using that. And certainly moving to another culture, another country. That was challenging. You know, I was nervous heading out there. I wasn't heading out to a Mickey Mouse country. I was heading out to the world champions. You know, traffic flow doesn't work that way. You know, it normally works the other way, you know. So, you know, I was a wee bit nervous, but I shouldn't have been worried because it was a fantastic place. But, you know, I think, what that made me realize, made me realize how small a country we are ourselves here, you know, in Ulster and Northern Ireland, you know. Bags of talent. God, we're too humble, you know. We're just too humble as people, you know. If we had big mouths and big egos, we could probably all have better jobs somewhere, but, you know, that's not us by nature. But we're still small guys, and it was the scaling up, even some of the things that we were doing well, to go and suddenly do it, not do it locally, not do it regionally, not even do it provincially and professionally. To start, I got involved in national programs. So I helped the whole of South Africa with World Rugby, IRB, / World Rugby assistance, completely changed their whole coach education system from an ad hoc provincial system to a standardized World Rugby system. We had to take the whole country with us. Real diverse, 14 diverse provinces, 14 provinces. So that was massive, the scaling up of that. I was heavily involved in one of my favorite subjects, which is player welfare. and I'm going to blow a trumpet here for two colleagues of mine, Dr. Wayne Villion and Clint Redhead, medical experts from the University of Cape Town, who worked so hard putting together what's called the BoxSmart Player Welfare Safety Program. If you ever get a chance, boxsmart.com, guys, go in and see what can be done in terms of a national program in terms of educating player welfare, especially in a physical game like rugby. That blew me away. The scale of that blew me away. And to get involved in that and to be working with those guys, I really loved that. I learned an awful lot about that. And sorry, Simon, what I also learned a lot was about myself. You know, I wasn't just working with Afrikaners. I was working with people from the Zulu community. I was working with the Black community. Such a range of people who, a bit like us, are coming out of their own conflict areas. And it was so refreshing to see, contrary to preconceived conceptions, what was really going on there, and the emergence, the very quick emergence of hugely talented pool of non-white players to join the traditional white South African players, that despite the fact that they export players all over the world, they're still the current world champions. You know, so if you can't learn from the country of the world champions, you're a fool.
It's interesting, actually, some of the things, Ricky, just when I'm listening to you, some of the things you're talking about, the lessons, even from that, like 14 provinces and bringing people with you, you know, it's sort of beyond coaching some of those lessons. But did you see those transfer through about the ability to bring people with you actually on a massive project like that, but the ability to bring players through as a coach and bring them together and bring them along a journey with you as well? Do you see some parallels between, I suppose, the wider project management stuff and actually, as you say, getting back out onto the grass and doing it out there?
Absolutely, and yes, you're right. I've been talking about scaling it up, but you're right. The core parts of that remain the same. It's all about empowering people and trusting people and building relationships. Everything's about building relationships, whether it's with the coach or a player or in the academy. If you didn't have good relationships with family and friends to give them that balance, so you know, yes, the scale may be big. But I suppose the interpersonal skills remain the same, and the importance of those. And what I found was, when I was scaling it up, because we designed an academy system where the country's so big, you had regional academies feeding into a central academy. And one of the biggest pleasures I had was being given the responsibility to find the right staff for those academies, the right physios, the right coaches, even the right nutritionists, because they were living academies. But all those things, despite the scale, were things that you were still doing back home in Ulster before you left, in terms of your own personal competencies and skills. So I think what I'm saying is it's transferable. You know, the skills are transferable, and the scale just lets you know what's possible out there.
And Ricky, you mentioned the connection you have with IRB. Yeah. Obviously, there's a lot of work going on around the world from maybe more developing countries that aren't traditional rugby powerhouses, if you like. What can they improve, or what have they improved in terms of coaching and that sphere?
Yeah. Well, look, first of all, I left out on one of your earlier questions, Simon. You asked me about influences on me, and there's a guy called Mark Harrington. He was head of World Rugby coaching while I was in South Africa. He came out and he taught me. I learned so much from that guy. I did. So I would like to pay tribute. He's now heading up this program, and what I learned about their work is exactly what you're getting at, Michael. Is when you hear rugby, you think of the normal rugby countries. I'm not going to rhyme them off to you. They're all tier one nations. They've been playing a long time. We've got some other countries trying to catch up, but that's a different question. Closing the gap between the tiers, whew, that could keep us all day, because the tier one countries have got the capacity to grow quicker. So closing the gap could be a difficult one. But you would be absolutely blown away if you knew the amount of work, the amount of investment, physical resources, human resources, financial resources that World Rugby You know, after the profits of World Cups and one thing or another, are investing into countries in the world. I mean, I remember Mark, I remember saying to Mark quite some time ago, I remember saying to him, hey, what countries do I need to look out for, Mark? What countries are going to come over the hill in one of these few years? And he reassured me it would be a long time before they come over the hill, because we'll come back to that. He says, there's more going on in China and Brazil than there is in other countries, but you won't even hear about that for another 15 or 20 years. That's where they are in terms of building capacity. Clearly, we've got a lot of nations now in Europe that are really working hard. I mean, don't underestimate the quality of rugby in Spain, Portugal, Germany, Estonia, Latvia. There's a lot going on. You just don't hear about it very much. And so the IRB, I mean, what they're doing, along with the country's own departments of sport or whatever they're doing, there's a large investment going on. And it's all about building capacity. And so the IRB would be building capacity, taking best practice in coaching, best practice in officiating, administrating. Administrators need health and safety. They're building capacity and all that. What we need now is for the mother countries involved to start and get some sort of permanent structure in place, you know, from their clubs and schools through the age groups, that will allow that capacity to go ahead and do its work and bear fruit. But it's a big investment, and it's a long-term investment, guys. And there's an awful lot going on that you know, we don't know about.
So Ricky, moving back a bit closer to home then.
Yeah.
When we think about coaching culture that we have in Ulster, what would you like to see across the province if you could describe that coaching culture to us?
That's a tough question, Michael, because we've been asking that question for a long time. Most of us have. You know, what is Ulster rugby? What does it mean to us? We ask ourselves that all the time. You know, I don't think there's one particular answer to that. I mean, it's evolving. I hope what Ulster rugby is it's evolving. I previously paid respect to our new CEO and our new head coach, Dan, and they're working hand in hand with us in developing who we are. What is the Ulster way? A lot of that is going to be based on our own personal philosophies. It's going to be based on the history of rugby and what's out there. Technically, Dan, head coach, he needs to integrate a technical model that fits into our Ulster way, for want of a better phrase. So I'm not going to pretend that I'm the one that's solving this. I hope I'm contributing to this. But I'm very confident we're in safe hands. We're looking for that. But what we do know is the Ulster way, or our coaching philosophy, or our philosophy of who we are, will definitely be based around the needs of people. It'll be player driven, based around the needs of players, parents, coaches, clubs, and the community. I am very confident that we're on the right track to evolve in this the right way it needs to go. I think we're in pretty safe hands there, and we're constantly asking ourselves these questions, as I'm sure all the guys are in the other governing bodies. I have no doubt about that. We're constantly striving, to make ourselves the best that we can be. It's a very difficult question to answer, but I think by trying to answer it, it means you're focused on the right areas of work, and we're basically trying to make it the best that we can be. That's what Ulster rugby looks like, to us, to you. That's who we are. But I also think, despite what I've said, one of the most important things that will come through to that will be the core values of the game, rugby's famous, like all sports, for what it does for people. But, the core values of integrity, passion, discipline, respect infiltrates everything we do and everything we think. And sort of solidarity, where rugby provides lifelong friendships, no boundaries, et cetera, et cetera. That's who we are. Getting it into a phrase, getting it into a sentence, getting it into a technical model, getting it into a coach development program, coach education program. It's hard to put it in words, but it's there. We're trying to get it, you know, infiltrating everything we do. I don't know if that made sense, guys.
Oh, no, absolutely, Ricky. Thanks for that. I think we've talked, actually, as we've gone, I know we've a couple of questions left here, but as we've worked through it, we've sort of worked from a personal level to a global level to a national level and to a provincial level. And I suppose the penultimate question that I want to pose to you, Ricky, is really taking it down to the micro level of we're walking onto a rugby pitch or into a sports hall or whatever other type of sports environment that it might be. What would you see in a great session, a great coaching session? What would you think? Actually, I've seen it. That's what it is.
Oh, another tough one, Simon, but a good one. I mean, it'll probably vary depending on what age group you're working with or what level of competence. But there are certain things you would expect to see in all of them, and one would be a feeling of welcomeness, warmth, that permeates everything you do. An environment where everyone's comfortable, where coaches are happy to challenge players, and players are happy to accept that challenge as part of their development, and they feel empowered along that way. We're working very hard on that. We really need to, you know, if we're going to improve decision making on the field ultimately and improve performances at all levels, we feel very importantly that it should be that. It's fun. You know, just because you go up the levels doesn't mean the fun drops down. Just because it gets serious doesn't mean the fun has to stop. You know, there has to be enjoyment there. And I mean enjoyment for the coaches as well as enjoyment for the players. I would like to see that and hear that and taste that and smell that when I arrive at any session. And I think you can, if you're experienced, you can see through that. I think those are, without going into too much detail, I think those are the main things we're looking at. And if I haven't mentioned safety, that comes with that's a prerequisite in our game, you know. So a safe, warm, friendly, welcoming environment, yet the challenge is right for the level of participant and everybody's comfortable in it. Maybe that's utopia. I don't know, but that's what we're looking for, I think.
Brilliant. No, I think I know the two of us could definitely stand behind and over that. So, Ricky, to finish off, it's been absolutely fascinating to listen to you today. These are always the types of podcasts that I nearly enjoy most, because we can sit back and listen and enjoy the story as we go along. But we've asked you a whole pile of questions, so sometimes that's the most difficult one. But is there something that we haven't asked you about that actually you think that would be quite useful to share or quite interesting to share to finish off?
Well, look, thanks. Thanks for that. It's a chance for me maybe to ask a question or just, you know, in all these years of coaching, is there one wee nugget of advice that I could maybe give coaches out there? You know, there's hundreds of things. But one wee simple thing would be, if you're going to get involved in coaching, brilliant, stick to the why. I found that out recently. Why do you want to coach? There's a reason why you want to coach. Deep down there, we know it. It's probably to give back to your community, give back to your school or club, help the kids or whatever. There's a really good number of reasons why you want to coach. Trust those whys. Go back to those whys and develop your own wee philosophy. I'm not trying to make it complicated. Your own wee philosophy about why you want to coach and the type of coach that you would like to be. Now, that will change through time and evolve. But initially, it might be as simple as, I want to enjoy coaching and I want my kids to enjoy my coaching. That's going to drive me. And it might evolve into something else as the years go by. Here's the key, I think, to anyone. Don't let others force you into being the type of coach that takes you away from your philosophy. And decide why you're coaching, the type of coach you want to be, and then you take ownership for that. Don't sit back and wait for Michael Cook or you, Simon, or me, or the governing body, or a council, or someone to set up something that's going to make you a better coach. I think I got a better coach by reading books and asking questions and watching TV and thinking and scribbling notes than I ever did out of anything else. You know, so that would be my advice. Would be grab it. You know, you don't have to take my journey. It might be a volunteer journey. But there are similarities, which are, you know, decide who you want to be, and then you go out and take charge of your development. You go out and find out, how can I make myself better at this? I think that would be my simple advice to me.
That's absolutely fantastic. Listen, we just want to thank you for taking the time to chat to us today. You know, you can tell there's a wealth of experience there in the game, both at home here and abroad. And it's been lovely for us to listen to you sharing that and sharing some of the knowledge and the wisdom that you've picked up along the way. So thank you very much for coming on the podcast on behalf of Simon and myself.
Well, look, thank you to both of you guys. Great spending time together, especially during this difficult period. There's no better time than just chatting, coaching with colleagues. So look, thanks for the opportunity, and let's hope we all get through this wee period and we come bouncing back stronger than ever.
Another really interesting conversation for us with the Curious Coaching Podcast. Really good to sit with Ricky for an hour and have a chat through his coaching journey. What were the one or two things that you were really taking away from the conversation?
Yeah, look, there was probably more than one or two, but some things that jumped out to me was really around, you know, simplifying the message as coaches. Reminds me of that old phrase, everything should be as simple as possible, but no more simple than that. So you're not oversimplifying it, but keeping it simple and being able to communicate that way. I thought I really liked that. And the other bit was when he spoke about the game had changed and coaching had changed in some ways, but some ways stayed the same. And one of the big things that stayed the same there is around coaching the person in front of you and coaching the person. And, you know, people don't change, you know, basic human characteristics stay the same. And the reasons why people play sport, you know, don't change too widely. And I think there's some truth in that. And I really liked that. I thought that was quite refreshing to hear that. What about you? Did anything jump out for you?
Yeah, a couple of, well, as you say, actually more than a couple of things, but the two that I've highlighted here, one was quite a simple message right at the very tail end of the podcast. But I think, as you say, sometimes actually simple messages are the most valuable. We talked about be yourself as a coach, be your own coach. You know, decide how you want to be as a coach and take control of your own learning. It's in your hands. There's loads of different ways. And he talked about curiosity with questions and all those sorts of things. So I think that was a really nice way to finish the podcast. And for me, the other thing that came across at various different points throughout, in fact, maybe throughout all of it, where clearly Ricky has a really solid moral compass. And he saw that, yes, we can give people great experiences in sport and we can do great things with sport. But actually, sport, there's so much of a wider impact that can be made within and beyond sport. And when he touched on I think his thinking around COVID at the minute, or previously in the racial divide in South Africa, and trying to support people who maybe were being disadvantaged in an unjust way, I think that was really of very high moral fibre and sort of summed up the type of person that we were chatting to.
Yeah, absolutely.
So to finish off then, again, if you've listened to this episode, we really appreciate your time and giving us an hour, and hopefully you've enjoyed listening to Ricky's story and have been able to take some messages away for it yourself. We'll be back in around about a month's time with another edition of the Curious Coaching Podcast. Until then, stay safe and enjoy your coaching if you get a chance to get back out coaching. Thanks very much.
Curious Coaching is brought to you by Sport Northern Ireland. We hope that this episode has sparked some curiosity for you and your coaching. The future belongs to the curious.